Hey, this is Steve, and this podcast is all about making the gospel relevant to your life. That means whatever you're going through, the answer is in allowing God to press the good news of Jesus deeper into your life. In fact, it's that good news, the gospel, that carries with it several very important implications. In our current election season, some of the key issues we're facing are abortion and immigration. These issues stem from the key gospel value of human dignity. What does the gospel tell us about the value of human life? And how might that change our political views and our love for our neighbors? What can we do in little bitty Gilmer County to fight for the value of human life? Today we're in the third message in this series called Forward, and we're kind of looking at how we as believers are to move forward in our nation. You know, it doesn't take a genius to look around and to see that our nation is turning increasingly anti-Christian and anti-God. And it seems like the doors continue to slam on us in every way, culturally, politically, and even violently, right? This week, we just saw again at that community college in Oregon with that one crazy guy that went and asked those students one at a time, "Do you believe in God?" And that answer was the determining factor to whether they were shot or not, right? I mean, we're seeing that happen more and more, and that guy sure wasn't acting on behalf of any group or government or anything like that, but our culture is increasingly against us. But what does that mean, increasingly against us? I mean, our culture, I don't think, is out to kill us. Our culture is not out to keep us from worshiping, is it? Our culture just has a different social and cultural agenda than we do, right? So there's certain issues that we stand for. We've been talking about the last couple of weeks about how our one fight is against death and to bring the kingdom of God. That's our one fight. But honestly, we get caught up in a lot of little bitty fights, don't we? We get caught up in all the little fights of this particular kingdom. So what are those issues that we fight for and against? What are those things that we take a stand on, and what are the things that we just kind of ignore? A lot of people don't understand where we base the things that we stand from on. They don't understand that we don't just kind of pick and choose, you know, based on the political winds of the day. That's just not the case. I mean, think about it. What political party in our nation are the evangelical churches typically aligned with? The Republican Party, right? We typically kind of are known to be part of the Republican Party. They call us the religious right, right? And so they kind of say that we're for them. But their issues, let's be really clear, their issues are not our issues. All right, we fight for a big kingdom, not for just kind of changing this little kingdom. Right? Because what Republicans believe and what Democrats believe may or may not line up with where we stand on issues. I mean, think about it. The Teddy Roosevelt Republicans of the early 1900s, the issues that those Republicans were fighting for were things like putting wage earning caps on CEOs. They were talking about restricting the number of hours a person could work each week and instituting a minimum wage. Those are issues that today we kind of typically associate with those on the left, right? But Republicans were championing those issues back 100 years ago. So what happens is, as the political winds blow, the things that the parties of this world stand for, they change. They come and they go this way and they go that way, but we don't fight for the things of this kingdom. We take a stand for the big kingdom, the capital K kingdom, and we choose our issues based on what the big kingdom, what direction it is going in. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. You know, we've talked about the big kingdom. We've talked about the life kingdom, not the death kingdom, over the last couple of weeks. If you missed any of those messages, you can just get them on our website at orchardlj.com. They're available there via podcast, or you can just stream them or whatever. And so that's easy. It'll help you kind of catch up. But today, what I want to do is I want to take a little bit of a turn, and I want to talk a little bit about the fact that while our fight is the gospel fight, while we are fighting for life and against death, the gospel does inform us on several key issues. The gospel really has clear implications about where we stand in this world and in this little kingdom. And the big key issue that I want to talk about today is that of human dignity. And if we can really understand what the gospel says about human dignity, it'll change the way we see people around us. It'll change the way we view a lot of these issues that our nation fights about. It'll change the way we look at a lot of different things. And so I want us to look at that today. We look at this issue differently than the people of either political party look at it. Because remember, we are looking at it from the vantage point of a different kingdom. Our citizenship is not in America. Paul reminds us in Philippians that our citizenship is in heaven. He says, we're citizens of heaven where the Lord Jesus Christ lives, and we are eagerly waiting for him to return as our Savior. So we're all about the big capital K kingdom, not about the little K kingdom. And so when we speak on behalf of the capital K kingdom into this world, when we take a stand on gospel issues, frankly, it feels weird to the world around us. Right? I mean, they look at us and they often feel like we're trying to translate our morality to them. They feel like we're trying to change the way they behave so they'll behave the way we think they ought to behave. That we're telling them what to do, what they can do, what they can't do, what's right. They think that we're trying to infringe on a woman's right to choose. They think that we're dictating behavior to everyone. And I just want to be really, really clear off the front end. We are not in the behavior change business, okay? We're not in the behavior change business. That's just not it. Hey, why would we ever expect anyone to accept our, you know, political agenda, I guess, in this world? Because we are describing a life that they don't have. We're describing a lifestyle that they never signed up for because we serve a king that is different from the world's kings. So it doesn't seem to make sense in their eyes. They take offense to us. They think that we're trying to modify their behavior, and we are not in the behavior changing business. We are in the rescue business. We're here not to change the behavior of people in this kingdom. We're here to rescue people out of this kingdom and to transfer them to the real kingdom. That's the business that we're in. We get all caught up thinking it's a political fight, and then we got to build a coalition and get the votes and change minds, but we're really out to change hearts. We're really out to change their citizenship all together. We aren't behavior changers. First blank on your page is this: we are kingdom bringers. We aren't behavior changers. We are kingdom bringers. It's not about making people good or changing their behavior so they'll be better. It's about transforming lives. That's what we're here about, because that's what the gospel has done to us. That's what the gospel has done to me. It's changed my residence. It's changed my citizenship from this world to another world. I no longer serve this kingdom. I serve a much better kingdom. And so the view that I take, the lifestyle that I live, the words that I speak, the things that run through my mind are of a different realm than the people around me. And so I have a different objective. I no longer strive within the confines of this little death kingdom. I'm part of the new life kingdom. And so what the new life kingdom tells me is that, it's the next blank on your page, is that I need to see my neighbors through the lens of the gospel. I need to always be able to see my neighbors through the lens of the gospel. This is huge. for us. This is huge for us because we forget this all the time. We kingdom people, we forget to see our neighbors through the eyes of the gospel. So what we do is we look at the criminal among us and we say, I hope he gets what he deserves. We look at the single mom and we say, yeah, she kind of made her own bed. Now she's got to sleep in it. We look at the illegal aliens around us and we say, we better build a wall. And the gospel informs us differently. The gospel causes us to see our neighbors in a different way. Do I believe there ought to be consequences for your crime? Yes, I believe you ought to be punished for your crime. Do I believe that if you make your own bed, you got to sleep in it? Absolutely, I do. And do I believe that our taxes ought to go to supporting illegal aliens? Yeah, I believe that we ought to be able to protect our own families and take care of them first. Sure. But there's also clearly a heart issue that we miss. There's a kingdom issue here that we tend to neglect when we get all caught up in the battles of this little kingdom. So we have to see our neighbors through the lens of the gospel. It's huge. It's huge to see our neighbors through the lens of the gospel. It's easy for us to get a partial view of our neighbors through the lens of the gospel, because you know how it goes in church. We always start when looking at our neighbors with the gospel in the New Testament. But I want to be really clear, the gospel is not a New Testament concept. It's a whole Bible concept. The gospel doesn't start with Jesus. The gospel doesn't start in the book of Matthew or Mark or Luke or John. The gospel begins in Genesis. The gospel goes all the way back to creation. And we find the root of the story of God's redemptive work in mankind in Genesis. And I'm not talking about Genesis 3, after the fall of man, where God begins his redemptive work. No. I'm even talking about way before that. The gospel begins in Genesis 1 at the act of creation. And we've got to see our neighbors through the lens of Genesis 1 before we ever get to the fall. We got to see man through the lens of creation. So look with me in Genesis 1. And you know this story, right? Genesis 1, 26. It says this, God said, let us make human beings in our image, to be like us. Remember where this takes place. God has already said, let there be light. He's already separated the sky from the earth. He's already created the mountains and the valleys and the rivers and the oceans. He's already created the animals and the plants and the fish. He's made everything, the stars in the sky, the planets. He's made everything. And then he says, let's make the best part of it all. Let's make the crowning pinnacle of it all. Let's do what we've come here to do. We've saved the best for last, and now let us make human beings in our image. Nothing else about the universe really reflects God or shows God the way this is going to show God. Nothing else in the universe has a sampling of the glory and the majesty of God himself the way this will. Let us make man in our image to be like us. God is speaking to himself in the Trinitarian sense. Three in one. Let us make man in our image. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And then God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it, reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and the animals that scurry along the ground. So the next blank on your page is this: every person is an image bearer of God. Every person was designed by God to reflect the glory of God. That means every person is an image bearer, no matter what political party they're in, no matter what race they are, no matter what gender they are, no matter what nation they live in, whether they're Islamic or Christian or Buddhist or none of the above. Everybody that you see is made in the image of God. Everyone. This ought to change the way we see everything. That God has designed each of us to reflect His glory. That would radically change the way we see our neighbor. But look at this some more, Genesis 1. He says, let's make human beings in our image to be like us. So first of all, we see a lot of intentionality here on God's part. Right? We see Him actually deliberating over what He's going to do here. You don't see that in the rest of creation. God just does this, He just does that, He just makes this, and He just makes that. But with humans, He stops, and He says, let us make man in our image. God is very intentional with you. You are made in His image. You are created by God. But not only that, look at this. He says, they will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, and all the wild animals. So God created human beings in His own image. In the image of God, He created them, male and female. Then it goes on, it says, God blessed them. Look at this. God blessed them, and He said, be fruitful and multiply. Look at the instruction here. Look at this instruction. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. Not only has God created human beings in His image, but He has given them a very specific purpose. He made them to do something. He made human beings to reign over the earth. This is incredible. This is so different from our cultural view. Right? Because our culture, everything in our culture seems to be screaming at us that you are the result of cosmic happenstance. You are here today because billions and billions and billions of years ago, there was a random explosion, right? And there was energy and mass and matter, and time began, and it just all kind of blew up, right? And then through that explosion, everything kind of started coalescing together. And dust gathered, gas gathered, and dust became rocks, and rocks became planets and stars, and some of them lit up to become stars, and everything kind of came into some kind of order all by accident, right? And through the evolutionary process of it all just kind of randomly coming together, this happened to be this way, and that happened to be this way, and then somehow Earth evolved to be able to contain life. And life sprung up, and you just happened to arrive by accident. Oops. And here you are. And think about it. If everything is here by happenstance, if you and I are an accident, then there can be no purpose to any of this. Right? There can be no reason to exist. No wonder the world is so bleak. No wonder there's such hopelessness. No wonder there's such despair. No wonder the world seems to be increasingly turning away from God because they're believing in a whole theology of nothing. And that you're here by accident. But what God's word tells us right here in Genesis is that the image of God resides in you. and that you were designed and created by God for a purpose. And I believe he's placed you exactly where you are, in your neighborhood, at your school, where you work, in your family. I believe he's placed you strategically for his purpose, so that you will do something, so that he can reflect himself through you, image bearer. I really believe that. I really believe that about you, that you are the image bearer of God. N.T. Wright is a theologian in England, and he tells a story about when he was a child, he was sick. He had to be in bed for a prolonged period of time. And his mom, you know, was there to take care of him, but, you know, they had to go about the family business and doing everything else too, and he had to be in bed for a long time. So what she did was she set up a mirror in his doorway of his bedroom, so that as he laid there in his bed sick, he didn't feel so isolated. He could look to the mirror and see his family in the rest of the house going about their business and doing what they were doing. So he could still feel connected to them by looking into that angled mirror. Not only that, but wherever his mom was doing whatever she was doing, she could look through the house at that mirror and see her son lying in bed. They could make eye contact, even though she might be in another part of the house. And N.T. Wright describes this as being the image bearer of God. He says that we are created by God to be an angled mirror so that God can reflect himself into the world around us, so that when people see us, they see God himself. This is huge, isn't it? It's huge. We reflect God into the world around us, and God has created us as his image bearers. All of humanity is the bearer of the image of God. This means, next blank on your page, that all of life is sacred. All life is a gift from God. Your life is a gift to you and to this world by God. Yep, up here in the hills of North Georgia, where we as a community make little or no difference in the world around us, you were placed here by God. Your life is a gift from him. I'll take it one step further. Your ethnicity is a gift from God. You cannot violate that. Red and yellow, black and white, we're all precious in his sight. I'll take it a step further. Your gender is a gift from God, sacredly given to you by the Holy One. All life is sacred. From the unborn in the womb all the way to senior adults living in convalescent homes, to people here in America, to people abroad in other countries, whether they are Floridians enjoying the sunshine after all this rain today, or whether they're Syrian refugees living in a tent right now, hoping that the civil war will end in their nation, or whether they are anywhere, anytime, they are precious gifts from God. All life is sacred. But here's the problem. Here's the whole problem. You might be saying, Steve, you're telling me that the shooter in Oregon this week is an image bearer of God? I'm not sure that I believe that. I don't know if I buy that. That guy is an image bearer? I'm saying absolutely. Absolutely, he is the image bearer of God, just like you and I are. But the problem is this, and it's the next blank on your page. The problem is that every person is broken by sin. Every person is broken by sin, created by God on purpose, for a purpose, in the image of God, but that image has been damaged. broken by sin. Isaiah 53 says, all of us like sheep have strayed away. We have left God's paths to follow our own. And when we strayed from God, when we allowed sin as a race, as we allowed sin to enter in, we strayed from God, and the image of God was broken, almost unrecoverable, not able to be seen, obscured by all kinds of everything. That's why the image of God being missing in our lives, seeming to be missing, that's why we can't find our own worth. That's why we lose touch with who we really are. That's why there's despair. Right? That's why there's anguish and loneliness. That's why there's pain and suffering. That's why there is disease and heartbreak and murder and rape and wars and genocide. It's because we've lost touch with the image of God in us. We have forgotten who we are because we're broken by sin. That's why men abuse women. And that's why women continue to return to those men. It's because we've lost touch with who we are. We have forgotten our value created in us by God. We're no longer that angled mirror. The image of God seems to have been lost, and the result of that is that we die separated from God. When we have that broken reflection of God, that broken image that we're out of touch with, we die separated from God, and we go to an eternal separation from God, with no help and no hope. That's the bad news. But the good news, John, the gospel writer, reminds us, it's probably one of your favorite verses, and he reminds us of the good news. He tells us these simple words. He says that even though we were broken, even though we were dying in our sin, separated from God, lost the image of God, it says this, but God. But God, God, the King of the real kingdom, the ultimate, the creator of it all, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, God so loved. But God so loved. The word love here in the Greek is the word agapao. It's a form of the word agape. It means unconditional, limitless, always, never-ending love. You know, the Greeks had four different words for love, and this word, agape or agapao, it meant the ultimate, all-encompassing love that God has. God so unconditionally loved even the most broken among us that he did something about it. Are you hearing me? He so loved that he did something about it. Are you hearing me? God so loved that he didn't sit and nod his head. He did something about it. God so loved. John, 1 John 3 says, see how very much our Father loves us, for he calls us his children, and that is what we are. God so loved the world. God so loved the world. When John is talking here about the world, he means the complete totality of all created and fallen mankind. He means everybody. All the time, God loved everyone so much that he did something. That means that no matter who it is, God loved the homeless. He loved the Democrat. He loved the Republican. He loved the illegal alien and the guy with road rage. He loves the unborn. He loves the senior adults. He loves the prisoner. And he loves the shooter. God so loves the world that he did something about it. Come on. Yeah. And you know what he did? He sent his son. And he could have sent his son. He could have sent his son to come here and say, you guys have blown it here. You've ruined everything. We made you in our image and you just broke it. And now it's in shreds all over the ground. Can't even make any heads or tails out of it. Can't see God at all. So guess what? You get what's coming to you. You deserve judgment. You deserve death. And it's coming. And I'm going to watch and laugh. Yeah, he didn't do that, did he? Jesus came here. And he went to the broken most people. He went to the ones that were the most reviled by society. He hung out with the pagans and the tax collectors. He talked to the woman at the well. He touched the lepers that no one else was willing to get near. He didn't spend his time hanging out in the temple with all the religious people. Dude, he was all about being in and among humanity and loving us. God so loved the world that he did something. He didn't sit still. He was restless. You look all through the history of God and his people, and he's always trying to get here, it seems like. In the Old Testament, before the temple, God says, I want you to build a tabernacle. I want it to be like this, and I will dwell among my people. I will be their God and they will be my people. Oh, you hear him longing to be with us. And then the temple, he's giving the instructions on how to build the temple. And he says, and I will dwell among my people, right? And finally, the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory. Glory is the only one from the Father. And then in Revelation, the end will all come. And he will dwell forever with his people. He wants to be with us. Is that us? Because you and I, we say that we're being transformed into his image. We say we're becoming more and more like him, that we're taking on his character as our old self dies. He lives through us. Is that us? Are we running to our broken neighbors, or do we kind of keep an arm's length? I'm not sure that we really know what it means to fight for the big kingdom. I think we give it a lot of lip service. Because it's easy to watch Fox News and CNN and shake our heads and vote accordingly. But it's hard to jump in and get our hands dirty. But that's exactly what God did. He loved the world so much that he did something. So what that should mean for us is that if we really want to be like God, we should stop sitting and start doing. Are we kingdom bringers or aren't we? Maybe we are very caught up in the battles of this world. So the next blank on your page is this. How will we bring the kingdom? How will we bring the kingdom? What does that mean for us? Easy. I got four levels of things that our church is already involved in and that you can be involved in to take a stand for the image of God, to reflect God into our community and bring the honking kingdom here. Hey, this is Steve again. Thank you for listening today. Listen, I took off the section of the podcast where I outlined the four strategies that our church is undertaking to stand for human dignity right now. The reason I did that is because I wanted you to have a chance to be fully involved in standing for human dignity, wherever you are. So instead of having him on the podcast, I made a separate blog entry on my blog page at stevedusek.com. If you'll just go to my blog page and if you'll get to the entry that says do something about it, you'll see all four strategies there and you'll find links to ways that you can be involved in taking that stand
for human dignity. I believe that it is the body of Christ's mission to take a stand on these key gospel issues, and I hope that you will join us.